Is a class by His Holiness Devamrita Swami on Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela Chapter 4, Text 162, given on the 1st of January 2015 in Otaki, New Zealand.
Translation. The love of the gopis is called Rupta Bhava. It is pure and spotless. It is not at any time lust. Purport. As already explained, the position of the gopis in their loving dealings with Krishna is transcendental. Their emotion is called Rupta Bhava. Although it is apparently like mundane sex, one should not confuse it with mundane sexual love, for it is pure and unadulterated love of Godhead. Text 163. The pure love of the gopis has become celebrated by the name lust. The dear devotees of the Lord, headed by Sri Uddhava, desire to taste that love. Purport. This is a verse from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Om Ganachimandasya Ganachimandasya Chakshuradhanam Tasmai Sri Guru Vedana Jai Sri Krishna Sri Advaita Sri Asadhu Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. This is a subject matter that I'm sure no one is interested in. What is lust and what is love? Lust seems to have its momentary attractiveness and momentary promises of fulfillment and satiation. We discussed in previous days how the problematic phenomenon known as lust brings also worse phenomena, anger and greed. Anger because, of course, material desires can never be satisfied. This is something everyone has to realize, either through hearing or by experience. How the outcomes of lust are simply troublesome. Besides the anger, we discussed a few days ago about the greed. If indeed there is some supposed happiness obtained by the expression of lust, that so-called temporary and shadowy happiness is actually the worst enemy of the conditioned soul, because it binds you further to illusion. In other words, you get an illusion and that plunges you more into illusion. It gives you faith, shraddha, in material existence. Not bad, not bad. Yeah. So the anger and the greed are worst corollaries of love. But what about Krishna's associates? What's going on? We talked about developing an appetite, thirst for bhakti. When there is an appetite, then you'll feel satisfied as you see your bhakti developing. So much effort is there in the beginning. Why just the beginning? So much effort is there so that you can develop a healthy appetite. And we discussed how that's the purpose of the sadhana, the rules of devotional service, the regular principles of freedom. It's like if you've ever been so sick and you can't eat much,
Or you've been to the dentist. I remember some years ago, I had dental surgery and I could only eat blended food for like 2 weeks or something. You just long once again to sink your mouth into a crunchy pizza or something. You know, give me some blended food. So you're hoping, I'll follow the dentist's orders, and then in 2 weeks I'm ready for action. For the real activity. So similarly, practicing sadhana bhakti. We should know what it's meant for. Otherwise we'll think, oh, I'm just becoming a cookie cutter devotee by following these protocols and following this and following that. Every step you take, you should have guidance. I'm gonna be me. I'm gonna be natural. What is natural? That's what this section of Chaitanya Charitamrita is pointing out. We don't know what is natural, but in our conditioned state, we're making judgments, like a little child speaking things that the child takes so seriously. I have a picture in my mind of when I was, I must have been not quite 6 years old, and it was time to go to school, not simply kindergarten, but the first year in school. And then the neighbor is taking the little kids in his car of the neighborhood to school, and I remember sitting on the lap of one neighbor, and I had it all prepared in my mind what I would say the first time the school building appeared in my vision. So I said very seriously and solemnly, "This is the school that I do not like." This is a very solid declaration, it's full of meaning and profundity. But of course, the adult driver of the car just laughed and let me know, don't take yourself so seriously. But similarly, in our conditioned state, we think we know what we want. We've already spoken about how behavioral economists, Nobel Prize winning behavioral economists, have shown through scientific research that human beings actually don't know what they want. They suffer from miswanting. It's not that their situation is such that they can't get what they want. We generally think that's the problem. I can't get what I want. No, the situation is we don't even know what we want. This has been demonstrated by scientific research. And as we explained a few days ago, the evidence showing we don't know what we want is that we falsely estimate the emotional bang that a particular acquisition or event or whatever will bring us. We always overestimate. And that overestimation drives us forward in our material affairs. So how to cut out all the dreamy expectations and the overshoot? All of human existence today suffers from overshoot. There's what's called global overshoot, in which human beings today, in terms of their resource consumption, and the disposal of the waste from the utilization of resources is such that they think they're acting like they're living on at least 1.5 planet Earths. And statistics show that if everyone in the world, we'll beat up on the Americans now, if everyone in the world lived according to the same standard consumption as a typical American, you would need 2 or 3 planet Earths. So that's called global overshoot. It's like you're spending on your credit card and you have no capacity to pay the bills. And there's no concern about future generations because social psychologists have shown that human beings have a limited capacity to show empathy and concern for persons that are far away from them, or persons who will be unborn, or persons who don't look like them. And of course, the unborn, the future generations who will be around in the year 2100, they don't look like you in so many ways because you can't visualize them. So therefore, out of sight, out of mind. Environmentalists really moan and groan over this point. There's some limitation in the evolution of human beings. They haven't made it beyond the tribal mentality in which human beings are suited to deal with persons in the same village or of the same tribe. In other words, the technological proliferation of human beings, supposedly, has far exceeded their character development. So social psychologists are saying some or other evolution is, it hasn't brought about a holistic package. It's brought about technologically proficient human beings who have a stunted character development. And therefore the world is in such trouble. Anyway, so the point is that there's global overshoot and then there's also personal overshoot. And that's what the lust causes you to do. It drives you constantly for personal overshoot. But what about Krishna's associates? What's going on there? We heard the famous verse about greed. Greed is a necessary ingredient for pure bhakti. Well, how do you get this greed? The greed is not found on the material platform. You can't get it through pious activities. You can't purchase it in a marketplace. The greed is the natural development of following the practice of bhakti, the rules and regulations. It's a natural development from thirst, appetite, to engage in Krishna service. So we hope that you can get a lasting picture of your future development in bhakti. Don't jump over or don't neglect the appetite building stage. It's a great mistake. And even if so, in the beginning, in the very beginning, it can seem like you're conforming to things that seem unnatural at first. But then again, look at material existence. That's all about conforming to something that is utterly artificial and unnatural for you. So it's true, in the beginning of bhakti, you perform devotional service under rules and regulations, doctor's orders. But then something else starts to happen gradually. Now, Krishna's associates, let's go to the topmost portion of the spiritual world, Loka Vrindavan. What's going on there? There's no grandeur, there's no opulence like Vaikuntha, there's no majesty, there's no reverence and awe. There is simply the spontaneous attraction to sweetness, madhurya. Madhurya doesn't simply have to mean conjugal affairs, it can also mean essential sweetness. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu desired to taste that sweetness going on in Goloka Vrindavan. Because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna coming to experience what it's like to be a devotee. What is it like to take the position of a devotee? What is it like to... What does a devotee taste in Krishna? What's that sweetness and beauty that the devotee tastes in Krishna? And also, what is the bliss experienced by a devotee? Just think, about Krishna's sweetness and beauty, Chaitanya Charitamrita explains in a few verses earlier. The sweetness of Lord Krishna is unprecedented, and its strength is also unprecedented. Simply by one's hearing of such beauty, the mind becomes unsteady. Lord Krishna's own beauty attracts Lord Krishna himself, but because he cannot fully enjoy it, his mind remains full of sorrow. Krishna's mind full of sorrow? We thought that Krishna is unlimitedly blissful. In fact, his very body is composed of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. How can Krishna be full of sorrow? It has nothing to do with material sorrow. It's all about pastime, Leela. Oh, what would it be like to be attracted to my own beauty? You can't imagine that in a material world. Sometimes give the example, the closest thing I've heard to that kind of, to that phenomenon is one famous Hollywood actor saying, "When I look in the mirror and see myself, I think I would date myself." Of course, where is his handsomeness now? Where is his beauty now? There's a website you can go to and find comparison pictures of former stars when they were young and what they looked like in their old age. It is shocking. So, Krishna himself wants to taste his own beauty and sweetness. That's the second desire, Krishna. The first desire, Krishna, we spoke briefly about yesterday. What is it like to be the abode of love? I'm getting the love from, I'm on the receiving end of the love of my dearest devotee. But what is it like to be the abode of that love and loving me? What's it like to take that position of loving me? What's it like to be the ashraya, the abode of love? And of course, the third desire, Krishna, is what is the ashrayananda? What is the bliss of being the abode of love? So Krishna can't do that as Krishna, the supreme enjoyer. But Lord Chaitanya eternally exists. Lord Chaitanya has his own section in Goloka Vrindavan, in the topmost plan of the street. So it's not that Lord Chaitanya actually is an incarnation or an avatar. He eternally exists along with Krishna. So that way, Krishna eternally fulfills his desire to taste his own beauty, his own sweetness, to experience what it's like to have the position of loving him, and to taste the bliss that his lovers feel. So let's move into this third desire of Krishna's. What is the bliss that my lovers are tasting? Let's hear how Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami moves from the second desire of Krishna to experience his own sweetness and beauty to the third desire. Now please listen as I describe the third. This conclusion of rasa is extremely deep. Only Sri Damodar knows much about it. Anyone else who claims to know it must have heard it from him, for he was the most intimate companion of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then we're at where we are now, about the love of the gopis. Pure and spotless. And the verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The pure love of the gopis has been celebrated by the name lust. The dear devotees of the Lord, headed by Sri Uddhava, desire to taste that love. What does it mean? What's the significance? That dear devotees of the Lord, Bhagavat Priya, like Uddhava, in fact, headed by Sri Uddhava, desire to taste that love. It means, how could these greatest personalities want to taste anything material? The pure love of the gopis is celebrated by the name of lust, but it's not lust. the term lust is simply used like some indicator, because that's what everyone's familiar with in the material world. So it's like a metaphorical use of the term lust. But if it was actually material lust, how could Uddhava want to taste that love? Now keep in mind that Uddhava doesn't exactly want the position of Krishna's beloved consorts, but he wants the intensity of their love. Uddhava has his own relationship with Krishna. But that's the nature of devotees. They're always overwhelmed by other devotees' love for Krishna. So let's move on, text 164. Lust and love have different characteristics, just as iron and gold have different natures. Purport. One should try to discriminate between sexual love and pure love, for they belong to different categories, with a gulf of difference between them. They are as different from one another as iron is from gold. This principle is essential for understanding Krishna's pastimes. The attractions between Krishna and his associates have nothing to do with material emotions or material lust, material greed. Yet, those pastimes are emotion-packed to the max, unlimitedly. So in Krishna's pastimes, there is apparent grief, sorrow, greed, apparent lust, but these are all pure emotions expressed by pure personalities, pure bodies. No, nothing material. In this way, by hearing these pastimes properly, you see what is up ahead at the end of the bhakti development road. You'll be genuinely an emotional person. You'll be genuinely lusty. If indeed you have a particular relationship with Krishna. Otherwise, you'll be very hungry for Krishna's association in your own particular constitutional relationship. Friendship, servitorship, parenthood. Uddhava is not in a conjugal relationship with Krishna, but he's glorifying it because he hungers for the intensity that Krishna's lovers show for Krishna. Devotees always appreciate the intensity of another devotee's service. There's no need to wait until you're perfect before you can appreciate another devotee's intensity in serving Krishna and the flavor of that intensity. This is what it means when we say that devotees are like bees always going to the honey. They're always looking for the intensity of another devotee's service and a particular flavor of it. It's like bees can go from flower to flower. Even though the flowers are different, the bees know how to get the pollen from all different types of flowers. And in fact, expert honeymakers, they know that certain bees, when they buzz around in nature, they bring back to the hive varieties of pollen, and therefore the honey that's formed has exquisite multi-flavors. So that's what it means that devotees are like honeybees. They know how to relish flavors from all kinds of devotees and taste the intensity, the nectar of the intensity of the devotees' service to Krishna. That's what Uddhava is doing in the perfectional favor. What to speak of Krishna himself? We heard Lord Krishna's own beauty attracts Lord Krishna himself, but because he cannot fully enjoy it, his mind remains full of sorrow. He wants to taste. He does, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We'll go to a famous verse of Chaitanya Charitamrita, which we can meditate on throughout our life and career. the desire to gratify one's own senses is kama, lust. But the desire to please the senses of Lord Krishna is prema, love. Let's look at the verb word. It's on the screen. The revealed scriptures describe pure love as follows. Sarvata dvamsa rahitam satyapi dvamsa karne yad bhava bandhanam yuno saprema parikirtita. If there is ample reason for the dissolution of a conjugal relationship, and yet such a dissolution does not take place, such a relationship of intimate love is called pure. The predominating gopis were bound to Krishna in such pure love. For them, there was no question of sexual love based on sense gratification. Their only engagement in life was to see Krishna happy in all respects, regardless of their own personal interests. They dedicated their souls only for the satisfaction of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. There was not the slightest tinge of sexual love between the gopis and Krishna. The author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita asserts with authority that sexual love is a matter of personal sense enjoyment. All the regular principles in the Vedas pertaining to desires for popularity, fatherhood, wealth, and so on are different phases of sense gratification. Acts of sense gratification may be performed under the cover of public welfare, nationalism, religion, altruism, ethical codes, biblical codes, health directives, fruit of action, bashfulness, tolerance, personal comfort, liberation from material bondage, progress, family affection, or fear of social ostracism or legal punishment. But all of these categories are different subdivisions of one substance, sense gratification. All such good acts are performed basically for one's own sense gratification, for no one can sacrifice his personal interest while discharging these much advertised moral and religious principles. But above all, this is a transcendental stage in which one feels himself to be only an eternal servitor of Krishna, the Absolute Personality of Godhead. All acts performed in this sense of servitude are called pure love of God because they are performed for the absolute sense gratification of Sri Krishna. However, any act performed for the purpose of enjoying its fruits or results is an act of sense gratification. Such actions are visible, sometimes in gross and sometimes in subtle forms. You can meditate on this verse all your life, and it will give you newer and newer clarity in terms of how to engineer your lifestyle, what direction to move toward, regardless of how we're taking our bhakti therapy, regardless of the therapeutic nature of whatever ashram we're in. We need to know what is the goal, and what is the purifying principle. What is that purifying principle? Krishna's pleasure. Krishna's dearest associates, they're not thinking, I shall enjoy with Krishna. They are thinking, I will bring enjoyment to Krishna. Krishna will attain happiness by seeing me. This is 100% unselfish, not a trace of selfishness, what I'll get from this. So I was speaking to some of our lady practitioners, and I was asking them, well, because I wanted to understand from a position that I could never understand, in terms of taking that position, from a position that I could never take. So what's it like to be gained on as a sense object? What's it like? Let's say you're at a party, and you know why the men are there. And some of the ladies told me that, yeah, of course, all ladies know why the men are there. So I said, what's the particular bhava that's tasted when you're being pursued or gained on? And so they explained to me that feel valued. You feel, you know, wanted. You feel that your life has meaning and that, hey, you got something. You got what it takes. You're getting a selfish pleasure out of this. But your life's all about selfish pleasure. What's wrong with that? So the guys are in it for their selfish pleasure. And the ladies involved, the young ladies, they're feeling the selfish pleasure of being wanted. I'm trying to understand, but by proper inquiry and hearing, I got a glimpse. To feel that you are sought after is ego, just like the male ego in pursuing, being a predator, that's ego gratification. But the loving affairs between Krishna and his devotees have nothing to do with that. Krishna's dearmost consorts are simply thinking, Krishna will attain happiness by seeing my beauty. In fact, they're thinking, Krishna's happiness, although unlimited, it can't be complete until he sees us. In other words, they exist only for Krishna's pleasure. But then Krishna himself is thinking, by that attitude of pure love, they're tasting a happiness far superior to mine. What's it like to be the ashraya, the abode of love? I'll come as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and take on the emotions of my dearest devotee, and that way I'll experience what it's like. I'll experience the position, I'll experience the sweetness and beauty that's tasted, and I'll experience the bliss of that love. That's the mystery of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The perfection of love. Between understanding our understanding of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya, you'll never find a more complete understanding of material and spiritual reality. By hearing about this, gradually it starts to sink in over the decades. Because after countless births of material existence, we're so attached to our own welfare and happiness. And to hear that there's something higher than that, it really gives your life the pinnacle of aspiration. And what's a human being without lofty aspirations? So now you're hearing the highest aspiration. You may be thinking, well, that's so far beyond me. Yet, we should hear about the ultimate goal. Otherwise, we'll start to persecute ourselves. That, what's the point in following this strictly or following that? And it's cramping my style. I want to be natural. Natural? You're hearing about what is natural in the pages of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. We'll read a few more verses, and then we'll take some questions. The object of lust is only the enjoyment of one's own senses, but love caters to the enjoyment of Lord Krishna, and thus it is very powerful. Next, you have a long list of activities that are forsaken by Krishna's dearmost consorts, all for the sake of serving Lord Krishna, because they're rendering loving service to Krishna only for the sake of his enjoyment. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes a very important point in a purport amidst this series. Yes, we're hearing about the standard of love of Godhead and what is pure love, as spotless as white linen that's been completely washed. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur warns us in this connection that we should not mistakenly think that the idea of giving up everything implies a renunciation of duties necessary in relation to the body and mind. Even such duties are not sense gratification if they are undertaken in a spirit of service to Krishna. So you see, Prabhupada's books are immune to monomania, in which you just seize on one aspect and, that's it, and that's the only aspect. No. These purports are like gems, like diamonds, and you hold them up to the light and you see different facets. The bhakti science is so comprehensive. It's natural, though, as young devotees, new devotees, you just seize on one aspect or another. But the more you progress in bhakti, the more you're amazed by the comprehensiveness and the profundity. What's the principle underlying all the different aspects and profundities? The underlying principle is the pure love, acting simply for Krishna's pleasure. Love catering 100% to the enjoyment of Krishna. Kaviraj Goswami goes on to describe, therefore lust and love are quite different. Lust is like dense darkness, but love is like the bright sun. Thus, there is not the slightest taint of lust in the gopis' love. Their relationship with Krishna is only for the sake of his enjoyment. So this is what we hold above us as our highest aspiration. This is what we're making progress toward. And by hearing about it, gradually, the desire in your heart starts to develop, and the super soul in your heart notices, this is what you want. So first we hear, and then natural aspirations develop in the heart. And the super soul helps us. It's not that our situation is hopeless and helpless. I read about these things, I hear about these things, impossible. I know where I'm at, and never. But by hearing, the super soul in the heart helps you. As Prabhupada writes in one purport, Krishna is not lazy in your heart. Sometimes you wonder, what's he doing there? Yeah, going through this and going through that. Krishna, where are you? You're supposed to be the power mop in everyone's heart. What are you doing for me? The spirits of master is the external representative of super soul. And there is also the super soul in your heart. And in time, that super soul will reveal. If Bhajatam Priti Purvakam, if you're engaged in devotional service constantly and with Priti, affection, Krishna will talk to you. You have to make progress to that stage. Just like a little kid will make progress to the stage of being able to have teenage affairs. If we apply ourselves therapeutically and properly in time, these things will become more and more known to us. But the amazing thing is, this is also stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the more your love for Krishna develops, the less you think you have. That's the emotion of true bhakti, not that, okay, now I am a lover of Krishna, I've got it. No. The more you have, the more fallen you think you are. The more you have, the less you think you have. So you're eternally plunged into an unlimited ocean of greed for Krishna. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself says, if you see tears in my eyes while I'm chanting, don't think I'm an advanced devotee. You should know what you're seeing is simply a show, a dramatic exhibition. Why? The proof is, if I actually loved Krishna, I would have died long ago from separation. We hope that all of you, if you haven't already, will have the chance for tasting the nectar of Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's the graduate study to Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the graduate study to Bhagavad Gita. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his later phase, would relax by hearing Chaitanya Charitamrita. Srila Prabhupada on the boat, that critical boat ride on the Jaladutta from India to the USA, would take solace in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And as I spoke a few days ago, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if you haven't properly assimilated Chaitanya Charitamrita, you actually don't understand Bhagavatam. Actually, we are stressing Bhagavatam because of the authority of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But therefore, if you're going to understand Bhagavatam, you have to understand Lord Chaitanya. Because it's on his authority that we are stressing Bhagavatam. We are stressing Bhagavatam, Vrindavan. We are stressing Krishna's topmost lovers. All that is because of the authority of Sri Chaitanya.